You're listening to the Franchise Podcast Network, presented by Lucky Star Casino. KRXO FM and KRXO HD Oklahoma City, a product of Tyler Media, reaching over 1 million Oklahomans every week. Now, the Outdoor Hour, giving you the inside scoop on the great outdoors on 107.7 The Franchise.
As long as I can remember, I've been drawn to the outdoors. There's something primal in each of us that awakens when we step outside the bounds of modern society and back into the vast possibilities of the natural world. The more civilized our lives become, the louder our hearts cry for reconnection with our native ways. Failure is imminent, dangers drawing nigh, but approached with reverence and tact, the outdoors return wisdom and gain. In both the outdoors and in life, harvests are fleeting, but lessons and memories abound. With that in mind, we step forth boldly together in pursuit of ourselves outdoors. We are nothing more than tree stand troubadours. Welcome inside the Outdoor Hour. I can't with you already. We're just getting started. And I can already tell.
Let's go.
How are you, man?
I'm great. Someone said they came up to me this week and said last week's episode was the best episode we've ever made.
Was that the one that I was all hopped up on caffeine?
Yeah, with
JP.
Yeah, with Chef JP.
Yeah.
Yeah, best episode we've ever made. That's what they said.
Well, when you're good, you're good. I mean,
where's that coffee at?
Yep.
Or yeah. It could be the caliber of the guest.
I think. Speaking of guests, we've got another high-caliber guest this week.
We do.
And I love, I've said this before.
He's a Hall of Famer.
He's a Hall of Famer.
He's a Hall of Famer.
Hall of Fame guest.
Yeah.
For many reasons, but one on the list, one of those reasons, do we have any other guests that bring us notes?
No.
And he even had some for me, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
As a producer, he thought that you should probably have these.
Real fans of the show already know who we're talking about just from that comment.
The one and only. But we'll get to that introduction
to that
in a second.
Yeah. I am excited, though. We got a good show lined up for you this week. We are going to talk about a film project, Josh, that you were a part of recently.
I was. And, you know, I'm going to own it now. I'll own it later in the show again. Listen, I had some bad data. All right. My harvest number quote from the Meat Eater Project is not accurate.
But you know what you had was good sunglass game?
Yep, those were fire.
Yeah.
How about the slow-mo of me around the fire at the end, you know? Not really, really.
How about you kind of like flexing a little bit when you were holding up that Easy Up tent? Or the awning. It was the awning for
your
truck.
That was no flex.
There was
natural.
A little bit of flex
That's
there.
Natural.
No,
that's no flex.
There was nothing natural about that.
Yeah. That was
having,
all natural.
Having spent hours in a studio with you, our guest is nodding in agreement. There was some. Everybody else in
I
that
know.
Show looked the way they do every day of the week. It looked like you had a stylist come out and say, your beard was different. The sunglasses were different. I've never seen that hat before. I mean, you looked really good, but it looked like you knew you looked really good for TV. And I can't say I wouldn't do the same. Let me go ahead and get that out there.
Goldfish, I don't even know what to say to this guy right now. First off,
why haven't I seen this video?
I don't know. 220,000 other people have.
I have not. I'm not one of the many.
Thanks
apparently.
For doing your homework today,
yep.
Goldfish.
He did not understand the assignment.
No. Well,
in fairness, we didn't assign the assignment. So
I'm not much of a social media person either. So that's
you
my
live
bad.
On YouTube.
That's my bet.
Why don't we get into it? Let's let's introduce our guest and let him voice some thoughts here.
Well, we should probably introduce ourselves.
I know
first.
He's got some. This is the Outdoor Hour. I'm Taylor Maples. I shot a bear. I did. Yeah. We've stepped up the production value a little since the last.
Thanks
time
to Goldfish.
Goldfish, the one and only. Over there is Joshua Wildman Stratton.
Stratton.
Classic.
But more classic.
Yeah.
The classics of the classics.
Yeah, we call those greatest hits. It's a gold track.
It is a gold track.
In the biz.
We got a gold track.
We got a gold track. Behind the glass on the ones and twos, we got a Matty Goldfish.
Always baked and extra cheesy.
I love that goldfish.
Chalmers just fall out of your chair there?
I keep hitting the desk today.
Don't do that.
I know. Well, I'm not in my normal spot, you know?
And we got a great guest with us this week. The Wildlife Diversity and Research Supervisor from your Oklahoma Department of Wildlife Conservation. Help us welcome the Hall of Famer, Kurt Kuklinski.
Wow, way to set the bar high right there.
It's all downhill from here.
I have never had my own intro music. You have no idea how that makes a man feel. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Enjoy it.
Take it all in.
This took me way longer than you think to make.
I think it was worth it. I appreciate it, buddy.
I think it's worth it. I think everything that Goldfish does is worth it.
I have an idea for another one.
Please do.
Is that the Baja Men barking hoo-hoo in the back of that track? I've never noticed that until right now.
Yeah, no. He did some mad overlays.
Yeah, that's terrific. Kurt Kuklinski in the studio again this week. It's always good to see you.
Love being here. Appreciate the invite back.
Yeah.
Second best name to ever be on a radio show, Kurt Kuklinski.
Yeah.
You played linebacker, right?
He was a hockey player.
That's I think the story I asked you this question
myself.
Last time.
I don't even know if that's real. It's just a story I tell myself.
Now, the Kuklinski on a nameplate looks good on a hockey sweater.
Yes.
It on the football field back in the high school glory days, it was generally laying on the turf, on the grass.
As same.
A 140-pound cornerback getting bowled over by a pulling guard is...
not fun.
I didn't enjoy football as much as hockey.
Yeah. Well, you have a name for it, you know. That's the takeaway here.
And you know he's the real deal because he said hockey sweater.
He did.
That's
it's not a jersey.
No.
Now, the only way that gets better qualified is if he called it a tarp.
Tarps off, boys.
Tarps off, boys. Set the tone. Set the tone.
So, first question I need to ask. Do you or do you not think Josh met with a stylist before he had his appearance in The Meat Eater?
This is so stupid. Yeah,
he had that kind of Hollywood look to him.
He did.
God.
It wasn't the organic, authentic Josh that I'm accustomed to. I think he had a little prep.
Yeah.
I'm currently wearing a suit.
Yeah.
Although I'm not one to speak on the matter because, as it was pointed out by my kids when they saw the Meat Eater episode,
yeah,
I immediately got made fun of because I still had my handlebar mustache from deer hunting season, which was my tradition.
Which was appropriate. Yeah.
So
I was sitting here trying to remember if that was actually a part of the film or if I was imagining this.
You were
but
not
you
imagining
did have
it.
A handlebar.
No, he looked awesome.
Yeah,
not
a great one. But
no, it was great.
It looked great. It looked great. I thought we were in playoff hockey, you know, and mm-hmm. I felt good about it.
So we are talking this week about the Meat Eater film that you guys were a part of. Is the official title Dust Bowl Mule Deer?
That's what the film was called when we launched the film. But for if you search Oklahoma Mule Deer with Meat Eater's Ryan Callahan, that's how you'll find it.
That's how they've titled the episode.
Yeah, for click and searchability.
Sure.
Can we get that one more time?
Yeah. Oklahoma Mule Deer with Meat Eater's Ryan Callahan.
Thank you.
He's going to go try to watch it real quick in the commercial break. Yeah. No, actually, it was a really cool episode, and I got lots of positive feedback from people that don't work in the biz professionally, but Oklahomans, people that follow Meat Eater, people that maybe know some of you personally, gave me a lot of good feedback about just the quality of the episode. I thought it was terrific. It was neat to showcase the state. I have not spent much time up in the panhandle myself, so I know about the different ecoregions of the state, but even just seeing, you know, the geography of what's up there, I was even taken aback at, man, Oklahoma looks like that too.
Yeah, the cinematography was awesome. Their aerial shots of that landscape and those box canyons and that Mesa country, a lot of people don't realize we have that in part of Oklahoma, and it's pretty impressive.
Yeah, super awesome. It was an incredible experience. I know you guys spend more time up there, but, you know, to spend a week sleeping in canvas wall tent and just being there was outstanding.
I know this is something you guys did not a full year ago, but it
almost.
Was close to a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
So there's been some anticipation to see this actually come together, to watch the final result. I know you guys have seen it, but, you know, for the general public like me, I remember having conversations, Josh, with you the week after, you know, you were cleaning some deer and kind of reliving this experience. But it was really cool to get to actually see how it played out. I forgot that the weather wasn't really your friend that week, and I forgot how hard you guys had to look to find deer that week.
Yeah, and I don't think our week was any different than a normal week, particularly in years where there's not a lot of snow up north. And so that was a warmer than, you know, typical winter, and there wasn't a lot of snow. So there, you know, as we've talked in the past and has talked about in the piece, like, they were really just moving through the area. And yeah, it was a grind, but it was super fun.
So for anybody maybe that isn't quite as familiar about the topic we're even talking about, how did this project come together? Who were the parties that teamed up together? Kind of what was the goal of this Meat Eater project?
Yeah, well, first off, it was like, hey, how do we get models to go hunting? Right, as I'm glad you noticed.
Mm-hmm.
That's good.
Mm-hmm. Hair and makeup in that third wall tent. Is that
yep.
what that was?
Okay. Yeah, yeah. Craft services.
Yeah.
Yep. No. Living here and knowing that mule deer lived here, but me personally not knowing a lot about what do we know about the mule deer that live here, I was like, we should do something down in Oklahoma. And so I had called Weatherby and I talked to them about it, and they were like, yeah, that sounds cool. Like, I don't remember the last time if there's ever been an Oklahoma mule deer film, people will be interested in that. And they're like, we want, so why don't you dig into it? And so in those conversations, I found about the research program that ODWC funded through Oklahoma State with Dr. Coulter Chitwood and some Levi Heffelfinger and a bunch of other people, and Texas A&M giving some support as well, I believe. But we'll let Kurt speak to that. But anyways, we realized that this was the beginning of a multi-year research program on mule deer for ODWC to just find out even more information about them to better manage what we have here and get a better understanding of what we do have here. And they had healthy meaning like numbers they could trust from a harvest perspective, but didn't know a lot of other things about them that would be helpful for management of those of that wildlife. And so that made the story even more exciting, because there was this opportunity to tell the story or highlight the story of this research program. And so reached out to, at the time, J.D. Strong and others at ODWC, and luckily they were willing and helpful. And Kurt hooked me up with Coulter, and he was interested in coming over and being a part of it. And so then I called Ryan Callahan and said, hey, man, I got this crazy story down here. You want to do something? He goes, man, yeah, how about instead of it being an MDF thing, like Meat Eater goes ahead and makes it, and you guys can support that. And I had already had some sponsors on board. So, yeah, it was a perfect storm in a positive way of Meat Eater was super interested. ODWC and OSU were doing these really cool things already that really gave real value to the story. And we got to highlight an area that a lot of people don't think about when they think about mule deer hunting in America. And so, it all fell into place, and we were able to find a piece of ground and do all those things. And, it was great.
I want to get more into the weeds here probably in the next segment on some of the research and, Kurt, where this is leading you guys as a group. You mentioned, though, Josh, right there, that, you know, there's even a lot of people around here, locals, that don't realize we have mule deer in the state. Cal mentioned it in the episode that when he was standing at Will Rogers Airport, people recognized him. They came up. They wanted to talk to him. I have to imagine Oklahoma is a very pro-Ryan Callahan state. There are several of those states out there, but this is probably an area where people would recognize Ryan Callahan.
Just meaning you think there's a fair number of people who follow Meat Eater who
yes,
live here?
Correct.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair.
And I think it's also a population of people that would be willing to walk up and start a conversation about hunting with someone like Ryan Callahan. And for him to express that people were coming up to him in the Will Rogers Airport and saying, I didn't even know we had mule deer in Oklahoma, I think tells a lot. What was this experience like for you? Have you ever been a part of a film project like this where you guys got to play a role through, you know, the ODWC?
First time for me on that scale, I guess. I've participated in some of our internal ODWC productions, right? Outdoor Oklahoma episodes, getting our message out of what we're doing for fish and wildlife, for natural resource management. That sort of stuff I'd done before, so I'd been on camera a little bit, but never on something like this that was on a bigger scale with more recognizable partners. Mule Deer Foundation, Meat Eater, that was a little bit of a bigger stage for me.
Did you know that you were going to be on camera going in, or did that just kind of happen organically?
We were told by the producer that they would like to get some camera time for both Dr. Chitwood and I. So when Coulter and I drove out that day, you know, we met out in Guymon, drove the last hour or 2 hours together, and we're kind of talking about, you know, how do we explain the research that's happening? How do we make sure that we give all the context that's necessary and tell the story of mule deer in Oklahoma? And Coulter's a lot more familiar with doing some of the stuff than I am. He does, you know, podcasts and things on wild turkey across the southeastern part of the country, and you know, much more accustomed to it, kind of has a little more Hollywood, good-looking kind of guy, you know, not afraid to be on camera, not some, you know, crazy Polish name guy with a handlebar mustache.
I thought you grew the mustache specifically for the film, and I supported it.
Everybody's mustache in this video is quite on point.
But what's interesting is the one guy that usually rocks a mustache had the full beard going in Joshua Wildman Stratton. It looked good, man. I just like to bust your chops. You know that.
It was the hey, I'm out here for a week living in a canvas tent. It was the true mountain man look.
I got to turn my mic back on. Y'all can talk any smack you want. It's okay. I'm comfortable with who I am.
Honestly, I didn't know you were even going to be in the episode, and I think I texted you that as I was watching it. The first little cameo that you make in the episode is your truck driving through. And I was like, oh, I know that guy. That was cool.
Yeah, it wasn't the intent for me to necessarily be a part of it. But because of the low harvest success, and I got one, that's how that all kind of transpired. My intent was not to be in the film. I was operating more from a producer role.
Yeah, but it worked out really well because of your position with MDF and the way they kind of told the story. It didn't seem jarring, you know, as a viewer to just see it. And all of a sudden, who's this guy? And he's shooting a deer on the show. It worked really well.
I am the least knowledgeable person in that film. So, like, you know, I was not trying to necessarily be in it. But anyways.
Cool, though, that you got the experience. And I know you had told me, I don't know that we talked about this on the show, but how much you learned from that experience of being in the field with a guy like Ryan Callahan and someone that is, you know, quartered as many animals as he has and broken down game animals. That's got to be a really cool experience.
Well, and how many people have the opportunity to harvest their very first species on camera like that? How cool is that?
Yeah, that was rad. And for it to be, for me to be a native, you know, born and raised in Oklahoma and get my first mule deer in Oklahoma, for me, a super amazing story or experience.
Yeah,
you know?
That's typically something people are going to Wyoming and Colorado and Montana to do.
Yeah. And I was able to do it here.
Good for you. We got to squeeze in a break. Good for you. When we come back, we got more with Kurt Kuklinski. We've got some notes here in front of us with information on the Oklahoma mule deer population, an evaluation that they're doing, some harvest data. We've even on a back sheet got here some information on black bears in the Oklahoma panhandle, as well as some pronghorn research in western Oklahoma. So we'll try to get to all of that here inside the Outdoor Hour on 107.7 The Franchise.
You're listening to The Outdoor Hour with your host Taylor Maples and Josh Stratton on 107.7 The Franchise.
Welcome back inside the outdoor. Our Taylor Maples, Joshua Wildman, Strat, Matty Goldfish on the ones and twos. Joined today by Kurt Kuklinski from your Oklahoma Department of Wildlife Conservation. We're talking a little bit about the Meat Eater film. Dust Bowl Mule Deer is the official title, but a joint effort between the ODWC, Oklahoma State University, for some research purposes as well, with Meat Eater and the Mule Deer Foundation, telling the story of, I guess, what little we know about the transient mule deer population in Oklahoma. What did we know going into this?
We knew some basics. We're on kind of the eastern periphery of mule deer range as they occur in the United States. So there's kind of an imaginary line that runs through part of western Oklahoma, down into the Texas panhandle, up into Kansas, that far western part of Kansas where mule deer are native, and we've had them for a while. We knew their range. We knew that population density was generally low. I mean, we're not dealing with a similar population to what you'd find in some of the mountain states up in Wyoming or Colorado. So what we have never done as a wildlife resource agency, as a management agency, is we've never looked deeply into whether or not we need to differentially manage between whitetails and mule deer. Up until here recently, there's just been a general deer tag that you would buy as a hunter that would allow you to harvest either species. And just because of the limitations of the range of the mule deer and the low density of humans out in the mule deer range, we weren't ever really super concerned about over-exploitation of mule deer, of over-harvest of mule deer, because there's a lot of private land out there. Access is limited to those mule deer. There's not a lot of people out there that are hunting them. So we never felt like there was a danger of, oh my gosh, they're going to be over-harvested. This is, you know, some critical point that we have to regulate better. We're looking at this more of our eyes wide open. Let's allow the data to show us where this leads us and then determine, do we need to make any management or regulatory decisions based on this research?
So a remedial question for you. But based on the fact that other states do have unique tags for mule deer versus whitetail, you could make an assumption that those states have specific plans in place for managing by species, correct?
That's generally the case. We have so few mule deer here relative to those other states that, honestly, it wasn't ever a huge focus of our time and effort to dig this deeply into it. I mean, whitetail is king here. We have, you know, thriving deer populations. We spend so much effort on whitetail management, whitetail habitat management, doing the right thing to provide the quality of hunt that we are able to offer in Oklahoma. And kudos to Dallas and his shop for doing that. They really have their thumb on the pulse of the deer health of whitetail, of deer harvest, deer management, and the mule deer focus is, you know, it's relative to the density of mule deer here, where we just don't have a lot of them and never really, you know, felt the need to express a ton of effort into this until this opportunity came up, where we started asking questions about, hey, can we potentially manage this species in a way that provides a little bit more opportunity, or allows people to utilize this resource a little better.
So, Josh, you mentioned in the opening segment that this film project was kind of the catalyst for some of this research. What are you guys doing now?
The research project was the catalyst for the film.
Okay.
Yeah. This was all in works. We just found out about it as we were discussing coming and doing a film here. And so we were like, oh, this is an even cooler story than we thought.
Okay.
We should go tell this.
So, thank you for the correction. What are you guys doing now?
So, currently, we're just over a year into this. It's a 4.5-5 year project. Year one in the winter of 24, so we're talking January of 24, February of 24, the first step in this research project was we need to deploy transmitter collars on animals and track them and follow them across the landscape. We're looking at movements, at habitat use. And then for the, we tagged, I believe it was 69 adult females, 31 up in Beaver County, and then the remaining 38 were downstate in Ellis, Roger Mills counties. So each of those 69 does got fitted with a GPS transmitter collar. And they also got implanted with a vaginal implant transmitter that allows us, it gives us off a signal that allows us to track those animals when they're dropping fawns. So that was a critical part in late May into June. The mule deer does start having fawns, and then the researchers are out there on site locating those does, and they'll go out and capture the fawn, and they put a little transmitter on the fawn that links to the transmitter on the doe. So now we're able to accumulate all these data about what is fawn survivability versus mortality, what is the overall survivorship of fawns, let's say after 3 months, after they're at their most vulnerable period. So, and what we found so far is, we capture, the OSU team captured 48 fawns throughout the course of, I believe it was mostly in June is when they were dropping those. And then 60% of those fawns, almost 30 of the 48 that were captured, were still alive after the end of June. So there's a couple of weeks in there from when they first hit the ground, when they're first born, that they're susceptible to predation. They're the most vulnerable. It's just a very dangerous world out there for a juvenile of any species. But a lot of predators are targeting fawns at that time. We're pretty excited to see that the survivability is that high right now. I mean, that's a good number, a good proportion of those fawns that made it that far. And of course, over time, we continually get data from those transmitters to know what survivorship remains through the coming months going into the winter. And then next year, we just keep repeating that. Every winter, we'll go out and put more collars on does. We'll continue to track does. We'll put collars on fawns in the spring, and we'll have 3 or 4 years worth of data that starts really telling us the story of what are the critical points in the life stages of these animals. When are they most vulnerable, and what can we do to potentially manage better or protect them better to allow a higher density of mule deer in Oklahoma?
Fascinating. I know we're just now getting into this four-year project, but it sounds like you're a little surprised at how high the survival rate is through the first, 60 days
right.
of these fawns' life. There's a lot of stories still to be told there.
Sure. But typically, just doing a little bit of research across the region, kind of on this eastern edge of mule deer range, I was looking at a study that was from 2018 and 19, a graduate student at Kansas State. In 2 years of collecting data and looking at fawn survivorship in Kansas, I think it was at 25%.
Okay.
So, I mean, we're initially just looking at what our survivorship was around 60%. That's a pretty significant number. And, maybe next year's completely different. Maybe, and that's why we do these projects over the course of so many years, is there's different environmental conditions, different resource conditions out there. That number could change drastically next spring. Mm-hmm. So we kind of want to get a really good idea across a range of environmental conditions at what our true average would be for the number of fawns that would survive.
Sure. Just looking at 1 year's worth of data like this, you don't know if that's, a median year or if that is the high water mark for survivorship.
So exactly.
That makes good sense. What do we know about mule deer harvest rates for hunting in the state?
That's been pretty consistent across the last, decade. In most years, that number, the total number of mule deer harvested, falls somewhere between 200 and 250 animals. And relatively speaking, across the entire deer harvest of the entire state, which is primarily whitetails, you know, in a typical year, there's 120,000 something animals that are harvested and registered every year. So mule deer are making up less than 1% of the total harvest of deer in the state. So
yeah, less than half a percent, right, even. That's
yeah. So that wow. tells you kind of the small drop in the bucket that we're dealing with mule deer compared to white-tailed deer. But yeah, it's, and most of that harvest is happening in 3, 4, 5 counties. Maybe on a outlier year, you might have a mule deer harvested in 6, 7 counties, because they are broadly distributed, but they're very low density, broadly distributed out there.
So Josh, looking at all of this information from the filter of the Mule Deer Foundation, what does this mean to you?
I don't know. I'm not the biologist. Like, I'm not even going to pretend to know. I don't know. I mean, what I can tell you from my experience is that I think where they'll land here in 4 more years of research is that the density of the population of mule deer in this state is heavily dependent upon the weather north, and that when the weather north is worse earlier in the year, meaning more snowfall, colder temps, we probably have an influx, particularly in the panhandle. I'm surprised that there are that many fawns being dropped here from what was collared. That was a big surprise to me. Knowing that, whether it's was 5 mule deer or 5,000 mule deer, if we have mule deer that are depending on this state to keep them and their fawns alive, we need to do our part to ensure that the habitat can support them on the landscape. And so my big takeaway is we can look at the science that can tell us some of the things that are most vital to a nursing mule deer, and types of habitats and plants that increase survivability of fawns and all of those things. And if they start seeing a heat map of areas where, hey man, every year we're consistently getting fawns dropped in this area, then that can really educate them and organizations like the Mule Deer Foundation on how they can come in and support and cultivate a habitat that will lead to long-term success and herd viability. And this is just the beginning information about that.
Another interesting part of this project is it's not just looking at the animals and their movements and their survivability and their mortality rates. Another big chunk of this project is looking at how do we properly survey these animals. And it's not the same as going out and doing a spotlight count for whitetails. And we have a pretty good handle at that, and we think we can accurately survey them and estimate their densities. It's different country out there for mule deer. So part of this
sneaky
project,
little,
yeah,
like sneaky little,
every part of that land out there has folds in it, and they're
real good at finding the folds.
Right. So
it's almost like their survival depends on it, you know?
Says the guy who'd never been mule deer hunting, you know? Like, he knows, Kurt, you know?
Listens well, but to who one said I've never been mule deer hunting?
I just made that up. Listens to one episode of the Outdoor Hour, you know? And he's
everybody's
like,
an expert. No, so what we're trying to do is compare some different survey methods. Like, the OSU researchers, they've deployed remote trail cams out there to try and look at estimating populations based on that. They're doing aerial flights. So we're comparing a couple of different survey techniques to really get a handle on what is the best method that ODWC can use to do an annual survey of our mule deer population and feel confident that the number that we get is accurate.
Is there a role that we as the general public can play in this? What do you need from us?
The biggest thing that the public provides us is just the support in consistently, buying the licenses, providing that funding base, being part of the Sport Fish Restoration Grant Program, where all of this research funding comes. That's number one, the biggest the biggest step. When you go out and buy your rifle and your ammunition and the excise tax gets put into the pool of money that gets funded back to the states for these kinds of projects, that's the biggest piece. On a little smaller scale, the feedback that we get from the general public, from our hunters and from our landowners, that's important too. I mean, if you're out there in Western Oklahoma and you happen to spot a mule deer that has a collar and an ear tag on it, we'd love to know that.
Yeah. We got to squeeze in another break. I've got more questions for you ahead, as well as I'd like to talk more about black bears and pronghorns and some other things here inside the Outdoor Hour. Hey, fall is here. Dove season upon us, deer season right around the corner. One of my favorite fall activities is chasing brown trout around the streams in Oklahoma and in Arkansas and just headed east a little ways from here where I live in Oklahoma City. Before I get out that way, though, the first stop I always make is locally to J.D. Adams & Company, the fly shop here in Oklahoma City, located at the northwest corner of 122nd and North May Avenue in Oklahoma City. Stop in, ask them questions, get outfitted, whether you need a whole new setup, rod, reel, fly lines, whatever, flies, or just some more information on where you're headed or the best way to target something that you're chasing in a stream this year. Go talk to the guys at J.D. Adams & Company. They always have great things going on. Mention the Outdoor Hour while you're in there too, please. They hear that every week and they love hearing it. I love hearing it. Thank you for your support of us and of our partners like J.D. Adams & Company. More with Kurt Kriklinski inside the Outdoor Hour after this.
Now, back to the Outdoor Hour with your hosts, Taylor Maples and Josh Stratton on 107.7 The Franchise.
Welcome inside the Outdoor Hour, final segment. Taylor Maples, Joshua Wildman Stratton, Matty Goldfish, and
Hall of Famer,
the one and only, Kurt Kriklinski.
Golly.
I love it when you're here, man.
Hey, can you grow a mullet for us?
Man, back in the day, I used to have some flow coming out that hockey helmet.
Yes,
it was pretty impressive.
Some lettuce, boys.
Out the bucket.
I love it.
Love that.
Buckets and tarps.
Seriously, though, we like to joke. If only the listeners knew what was going on during the commercial breaks in this studio, we'd probably have a lot more listeners. But
we could go the Howard Stern route, you know, and just let it ride everything.
Yeah, there's really an art form to that, for sure.
Yeah.
Anyways, glad you're here, Kurt.
Yeah, we're glad you're here. And we're glad that there's an edit button, you know?
We should have you back more often.
I think so. I think you should have a standing segment at least once a month during hunting season.
Yeah. Would that make sense? Could you pull that off? Is that
even if it's just 15 minutes? I mean, I'm not saying it's the whole episode.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I'd consider that. I don't know how much I want to cut into my hunting season, though.
You can call in. Yeah, you don't have to be here.
Call in from the field with bloody hands, gutting a deer. Okay.
We would prefer that.
Okay.
Yeah.
I can get a Zoom set up.
That'd be great. All right, so we've talked a little bit about the mule deer surveys that are going on across the state. We talked a little bit about the film project that you guys had. Do you have any last thoughts on the film? Is there any, now that you've seen it, now that it's been released, now that you've gotten some feedback?
I actually haven't watched it since it came out at all.
No?
No.
Okay.
Yeah. I've actually never watched the entire thing.
I did.
Yeah.
It's worth looking back.
Yeah.
I mean,
I've seen segments, like, because I saw so many edits, right? Like, during the whole process, and, like, I knew what we basically had, and I saw the very final before it went to, like, color and production, but
I mean, there's a lot of little nuggets in there that are pretty impressive. Number one, they actually got deer reproduction, mule deer copulation on film. I mean, that was pretty cool.
It was pretty cool.
Is that the first time that it happened here?
I believe.
That's a question for them. But that was the thought, was that that was probably the first time on camera that it had been
I remember
captured.
You came back in that next week and said, we actually captured something that the biologists were shocked by.
Yeah.
But I don't know that we ever actually said what it was at that point.
Yeah, we probably didn't. But yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah, so that's a really neat nugget in there. And then, of course, you've got, you know, Cal scoping himself.
Which was hilarious.
Yeah. There was a lot of good feedback online from that, too, though. People appreciated the humility of, mm-hmm. of that making the final cut.
But that's just Cal, too. Like, you know, being someone who's been able to know him for over a decade now, like, that is the most authentic version of Cal. Like, he's just, that is who he is, you know, which is, I think, why so many people enjoy him as
mm-hmm.
as a character in the meat eater world.
That's really cool. Well, any other final thoughts on the film and the research and all the mule deer stuff?
I'm very appreciative that we were included in the film, and I'm looking forward to the next couple of years, and we'll continue to provide updates on where that project goes.
All right. Well, next on our list here, ongoing research for pronghorns in western Oklahoma.
Yeah.
I gotcha. You didn't think I was going there next, did you?
He conveniently passed over.
Over what?
I don't know how to put this, but...
I just shot a bear. Ow!
Evaluating the population status of black bears in the Oklahoma panhandle, you jumped over that. I don't know...
I just shot a bear.
I don't know if your intent was because you just wanted to keep that information for yourself. Like, you didn't want people to know about it, you know? But there is some bear stuff here.
All right. Well, if you guys want to talk about black
I can totally appreciate the mileage that Goldfish is getting out of this.
Man.
We have to take a moment for the hours that he spends up here at night putting those things together.
For real.
You're the real MVP. No, we can talk black bears for sure. What's going on with black bears in Oklahoma?
Well, we just wrapped up a 2-year project with Oklahoma State researchers, basically putting remote camera traps out in Cimarron County, trying to get an idea of what we've got for a black bear population out there. And it was based a lot on the perception that people were seeing more black bears in that part of Oklahoma. And we didn't know if these are transient bears just moving through. Are they resident? Are they reproducing here? Lots of questions. After a whole bunch of trail cam pics and hair snares and hair samples and DNA samples, what we kind of figured out is a pretty good solid population estimate in that western part of Cimarron County is that we figure we have somewhere around the neighborhood of 26 bears that are kind of always out there in that country. We saw evidence of a sow with cubs on camera. We figured out through DNA analysis that our black bear population is very similar to, not surprising, northeastern New Mexico. We compared DNA samples to there and to southeast Colorado, and it all seems to be pretty much the same population that kind of moves in and out of those different habitats. So learned a whole lot about black bears and their habitat usage in Cimarron County, which is really cool.
Why is having sows with cubs significant?
Because at first we were really wondering, are we only seeing like the transient young males that get pushed out of the home range of their parents, right? So young male bears are typically the first to leave and they'll travel the furthest to try and establish new territory. So it wouldn't be unusual to see a whole bunch of young males. The fact that we saw mature sows, that we were seeing males mixed in, and then we saw sows with cubs tells us that we have the habitat to be able to support bear reproduction out in western Oklahoma. And we know we have that in the southeast. We know that we have that in eastern Oklahoma. There's a well-established population of black bears there. We did not realize that there may be, you know, adequate habitat available for bears in western Oklahoma to support a resident population like that.
This might be a really hard question to answer, but
that's my favorite kind.
We know that seasons ebb and flow, right? You've got warming periods, you've got ice ages, you've got, you know, population segments that will expand and retract and do all of these things. Is there any way to know? Obviously, we as humans play a role in some of that, right? When you're early in the stages of research projects like some of these, Are you trying to account for the impact of man in this at all? Or is it truly just what is that population doing organically? And then what is our role with this information?
It's a good question. And part of what we do in research is we try and control as many of those variables in our project design as we can. But we're never going to be able to control all of them. Certainly the environmental data, we obviously have no control there, but we do account for it and we measure it to see what influence it has on wildlife populations. We could do the same thing with the human component too. It's a little more difficult. Now, whether you're talking human dimensions, sociologically speaking, or just the influence of humans and our, you know, degradation of habitat, our usage of highways and transmission lines and all of those things that affect the habitat. There are a lot of research studies that try to evaluate the impact of that human experience on the landscape. It's difficult to pare out sometimes unless the project is specifically dedicated towards it. So these projects out in western Oklahoma weren't specifically looking for those human impacts, but we know they occur. And
this is also a portion of the landscape that has less human impact.
Correct.
Right.
But there's still, I mean, there's still a county road every mile roughly. And that does have an impact. There's fence lines that limit the movement of pronghorns and mule deer. I mean, we do impact the landscape. And then these animals are always having to adapt to that continual change of, hey, there's a new fence line on this portion of the property, or, you know, they blacktop the road that used to be a gravel county road, and now the traffic is much more higher density, and maybe there's more collision mortalities with mule deer out there because of that. So there's always that impact. But initially, when we're taking our first bite out of a lot of these projects, we're trying to look at the environmental impacts more so than the human impacts. And then at some point in the future, once we establish a baseline of what a mule deer population looks like, now maybe we have a better starting point to start looking at what are the impacts of humans on that environment.
Really cool. We just got a couple of minutes left, but you do have some pronghorn notes here, and I, believe it or not, am interested in the pronghorn research.
Lies.
the pronghorn research is pretty interesting because we're in our third year, so we've had 3 winters of collaring adult pronghorn and then 3 springs of tracking fawns. Same way we were talking about with the mule deer, we track fawn survival and all that. The first 2 years of this project, after 3 months of those fawns being born and making it to this time of year when we're through the month of August, annual survival for those first 2 years was around 11 to 12%. So very low survival of the fawns in the pronghorn population. This past year, in the summer of 24, that survivorship jumped to just over 40% of those fawns surviving. And the researchers and us, through conversations, we feel that probably reflects much better environmental conditions out there. If you remember, it was really green out in the panhandle. They got a lot of rain at the right times of year. The resources were good. The grasses and forbs and all of the available food was so much better for the animals this year that maybe that was to be expected to some degree.
And that's the importance of doing these research projects over a period of time, so you get a better, true look at what the data is telling you.
Absolutely. Ideally, if we had a 3-year project, I would love to have a sample with the worst environmental conditions, with average environmental conditions, and with the best environmental conditions. And if you have data that encompasses the entire range, I would feel pretty good as a researcher, as a biologist, making informed decisions based on that kind of a range of all of your data collection.
Yeah, that makes good sense. Well, thank you for joining us this week. We are up against the end here, but always enjoy when you're in studio. Again, I don't want to cut too much into A, your day job, or B, your hunting, but let's get another appearance on the books here shortly.
I'm in.
Okay, love that.
We love it when you're here. You're welcome anytime.
If you were to just show up.
Yeah, if you just drop me a text, I'm in the parking lot.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be like creepy. I'd be like, cool.
It's generally what happens when he shows up. Somebody comes to my door and says, hey, your buddy's here. It's
yeah.
true. They
He's
know the
not lying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, maybe next time we'll have people telling Taylor, your buddies are here.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, okay. Absolutely.
He'd have to have multiple buddies for that to be a saying.
And you know, there's a first time for everything, so.
We're here for it, though.
This is the Outdoor Hour. I am Taylor Maples. That is Joshua Wildman Stratton. He can be found on social media at @against_current. You can always follow the show page at @outdoor_hour on TikTok, Instagram, and Twitter. I am available at @T_Maples if for some reason you cared to follow me on social media. Department of Wildlife Conservation always has great stuff going on social
they
media.
Do.
OK Wildlife Dept.
We could learn a lot from them.
Yeah.
I really think we need to dive into some TikTok. I think Goldfish and you in particular could really dominate the TikTok space.
You know what's funny? We don't have time for this, but there are a lot of conversations around this radio group as a business about social media, and oftentimes the Outdoor Hour gets to lead some conversations. We've got a couple of videos with over 1 million views and things like that. So
I want to see Taylor's TikTok dance.
Oh no,
he's got a few of them.
No,
yeah,
no.
That might turn into an OnlyFans video.
Okay. This is the Outdoor Hour, and we should have ended 60 seconds ago for many, many reasons. Kurt Kuklinski from your Oklahoma Department of Wildlife Conservation, Joshua Wildman Stratton, Maddie Goldfish. Special thanks to Dave Myrick, who keeps us on air every week. I'm Taylor Maples. We'll see you next time. Until then, go boldly. We'll see you outdoors.